I'm Steve Kraske, and this is KCUR's Up to Date. In Kansas, the lawmaking season has come to an end, but the campaign season is just getting going. Today, we visit with two leaders in Kansas's opposition party and hear Democrats' perspectives on the session that was. We'll also ask them how they're feeling about the upcoming August primaries and the midterms that follow. Then, for most folks who can afford it, retirement is something you look forward to for a long time, but putting your working days behind you for good can be a big adjustment. Later, we'll consider the mental health impacts of retirement. We'll get you up to date after this hour's news. Kansas State Representative Jim Ward has had a busy few weeks overseeing Democrats in the state house, where he's the minority leader, and navigating a race for Kansas governor. But Ward just announced last week that he's out of the race. We'll talk to him about that, whether he'll endorse one of the remaining candidates, gun legislation, schools, and how he really feels about the two Republican frontrunners for governor. They are Chris Kobach and Jeff Collier. Representative Jim Ward joins us from the studios of Kansas Public Radio in Lawrence. Representative, nice to have you back again. Welcome.
Well, thank you for having me. Look forward to the conversation.
With him in Lawrence is Ethan Corson. He's executive director of the Kansas Democratic Party. Ethan, good morning to you.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
And we plan to have a conversation with Republican leaders sometime soon here. Jim, a week ago, you were making a compelling case for why you should be the next governor of Kansas before the Star's editorial board, of which I'm a member. A couple of days later, you were out of the race. I'm wondering what happened, and did we scare you that much?
No, it was a great conversation. I appreciated the opportunity to talk about the future of Kansas with you guys. What really happened is I sat down with my finance people, and we just couldn't find a way to raise enough money to talk to the thousands of Kansans who haven't even thought about who they're going to vote for governor yet. So we thought it in the best interest of Kansas and the Democratic Party that I focus on recruitment of Kansas House Democrats and making sure we have a strong presence in the State House.
How much money do you have? And I'm wondering, how much money do you think you needed, Jim?
Oh, I think $500,000 was the minimum before August 7th and really before, you know, July 15th to buy the TV time. And we weren't there.
Did you have half that amount?
I was very impressed and proud of the number of donors to the Forward campaign. And the one, I got to tell the story since you asked about money. I had a couple, but this one stuck out. A retiree, I could tell because of the scraggly line. She was an elderly woman who sent me $5 cash. And she says, "This is all I can give, but I believe you'll fight for me." You know, those kind of contributions made it worth it.
So when listeners wonder about the importance of money in politics, you seem to be a walking example of why it's just so important.
Yeah. But I would tell your listeners, if you ever have a chance to run for governor, do it. In Kansas is an amazing place. The people of Kansas are even more amazing. I love getting out and talking to them about their dreams, their hopes, and what their expectations were. It was worth every minute I was in the race, and I was proud to have an opportunity.
You know, your departure arguably now leaves the race without a candidate on the liberal side of the spectrum. And that's the argument that you made to the board last week, that only a progressive like yourself can attract enough Democrats to the polls to beat a Republican in a Republican-leaning state like Kansas. Jim, what about that?
My voice isn't going away, Steve. I'm going to continue to push for Democratic alternatives and priorities. And we can put labels on them, but really they're common sense, like we talked about last week. I go all over the state, rural, urban, suburban. They're concerned about an economy that creates good jobs. They want good schools, safe streets, affordable health care. These are the things that transcend party and ideological labels. And they're going to vote for the candidate who provides those solutions.
But with you out of the race now, can a Democrat still win the governorship in Kansas? Because, as I said, there's no longer arguably a progressive in the race like a Jim Ward.
Look, I got in the race because I believe Democrats were going to do well this cycle. I still believe, up and down the ticket, we're going to elect more House Democrats, we're going to put people in Congress, and we're going to elect a statewide ticket. Yes, I believe that Democrats are going to do very well this year in Kansas.
Is Jim Ward going to endorse one of the remaining candidates?
I'm endorsing them all. I want a strong, vigorous primary. I want to have a discussion of the issues that motivates people and that articulates Democratic values. And I think that will be healthy for not only the Democratic Party, but for Kansas in general.
But eventually, will you pick one candidate before the August primary?
Steve, I really can't predict that far. Right now, I've got 18 days to recruit as many House Democrats as I can to fill out the ballot so that we have a strong presence in the Kansas legislature. And that's my focus.
Arguably, this should be a Democratic year, Jim Ward.
Absolutely. We're going to put – it was last time. We put 13 new Democrats in the Kansas House. We plan on putting the same number again next year so we have even stronger voices for the priorities that Kansans want.
Ethan Corson, again, you're the executive director of the Kansas Democratic Party. There's going to be an independent in this race for governor. His name is Greg Orman, and a lot of prognosticators think that the addition of Orman into this race is going to make it, you know, next to impossible for the Democratic candidate to win. What do you say to that?
I mean, I think I view Greg as kind of an also-ran. When I go around and I'm talking to voters, what really I'm hearing is that they see a choice, a clear choice between the Republicans who want to stay on the brownback course or that they want to change, and that's what the Democrats are offering. I really don't hear much about Greg Orman. I mean, for somebody who has the statewide name recognition supposedly from running in 2014, it's remarkable to me how few people even know he's in the race or even paying attention to his candidacy. And I compare that to what I see on our side. I mean, we had a debate that Representative Ward was at. We were out in Thomas County in Colby, Kansas in January, and we had over 100 people there. I just see everywhere we go, I see amazing enthusiasm for our side, for our candidates, and for the issues that they're talking about. Everywhere we go, we're bringing out more seats. We had our annual convention at the beginning of March. We sold out. We had over 500 people there. So I just see incredible signs of momentum on the Democratic side. I'll give you a number. In Johnson County, between January and April, we registered over 1,000 new Democratic voters.
You know, Ethan, I can't help but ask, you had a job in the Obama administration in the Commerce Department, I think. How did you wind up as executive director of the Kansas Democratic Party, which has got to rank as one of the most challenging jobs in American politics these days?
Well, you know, I'm from Kansas. I grew up in Kansas, born and raised. Went to Kansas Public Schools, K through 12, went to Garden City Community College. And when I ended my service in the Obama administration, what I really wanted to do was continue to work on the issues that I cared about, continue to make a difference. And I looked at what was going on in my home state of Kansas, and I felt like we were at a real pivotal point as far as where the state was on a lot of issues that I cared about, public education, Medicaid expansion. And I thought if there was a way for me to make a difference and contribute to the cause, that's what I wanted to continue to do.
You know, Jim Ward, Ethan, just mentioned that the goal, at least his goal, is to pick up another 13 seats in the Kansas House this cycle. I'm wondering what your goal is and how many seats you need to pick up to make this a successful year for Kansas Democrats.
I don't want to put a specific number on it, but I think that it's going to be a good year for Democrats. We've got strong candidates who are out there who are working hard, who are knocking doors, recruiting volunteers. I've been out helping a lot of them, and I'm just impressed by the energy. So I think it's going to be a great year to be a Democrat up and down the ballot.
But having said that, a poll last month by Morning Consult showed that President Trump is still viewed favorably in Kansas by a 52-44% margin. I mean, that isn't all that different from where he stood shortly after his election in November of 2016. What do you make of that? And are Democratic prospects really all that good, given President Trump's numbers in the state, Ethan?
Well, I'm going to take a swing at that. If you don't, this is Jim Ward. I want to remind folks that in 2016, Donald Trump got 57% of the Kansas vote, and we put 13 new Democrats in the Kansas House and a new senator. So I think Kansans vote a federal ballot and a state ballot, and Democratic message resonates across state. And while the president's popularity may affect those federal races, I think we still have a competitive chance to win across this state.
Jim, why is that? I mean, if President Trump is still standing tall in Kansas, at least based on this one poll, why would you argue that Democrats would have a good chance?
We did it before. Remember, in 2016, 57% of Kansans voted for Donald Trump, while then turning around voting for Kansas Democrats in the House and the Senate. It's what we talk about on those doorsteps. Good jobs, good schools, affordable health care. Those are the kinds of things that Kansas are responding to, and I like our chances in the upcoming election.
But even in 2014, Jim Ward, you had a candidate for governor named Paul Davis who came within a few points of defeating Sam Brownback. But even then, given all the controversy surrounding Governor Brownback's administration with the tax cuts and everything else going on, Sam Brownback still won re-election in, again, a Republican state like Kansas.
Well, okay, 2 points on that. First of all, Sam Brownback had never lost an election or won an election by less than 55% of the vote, and he won by a hair's breadth in 2014. I think the last couple of weeks, Kansans believed the governor when he said, "I hear you, and we are going to change." And he didn't, and that's why you saw the massive votes for Democrats in 2016 and why you're going to see it in 2018, because there's not a whole lot of difference between Governor Sam Collier, I mean, Jeff Collier.
Okay, duly noted there. Let's turn to the recently completed legislative session, gentlemen. Representative Ward, how did you view it?
I thought it was a little bittersweet. And I thought we had some big successes. I mean, I thought the idea of stopping the tax bill that was going to give multinationals the ability to bring back money into the country that they had parked overseas for tax benefits.
But arguably, the federal tax code is giving Kansas a big windfall, and Republicans were saying that money should go back to the taxpayers, not remain in state coffers.
Yeah, and Democrats agree. What we disagreed with is we thought that the windfall should go back to middle-class Kansans and working Kansans and poor Kansans who picked up the load under the Sam Brownback tax experiment instead of multinational companies that had used overseas tax shelters who wanted to bring their money back with no tax consequences. It wasn't a question about who did or didn't want to return the windfall. It was a question of who would benefit from that windfall. We wanted middle-class Kansans, working Kansans, to take the biggest chunk of that since they paid it with two sales tax increases and car tax increases. They picked up the bills for the tax experiment.
Ethan, from your vantage point, to what extent did Governor Brownback's tax cuts set Kansas back?
No, I think they set it back immeasurably. I think that we are still digging out of the hole that Governor Brownback and his allies created for us. And what we've seen recently, and only recently, really is a little bit of budget stabilization. But I think that that was devastating to our infrastructure, to our schools, to our social safety net programs. I think it was something that we've seen a lasting negative effect on Kansans from.
You know, the big issue this session was the funding of Kansas schools. There's this question that continues to linger, Jim, which is, you know, did lawmakers add enough to school spending to satisfy the Kansas Supreme Court? The legislature tossed in more than $500 million to public schools over the next 5 years. But is it enough? Will the courts be satisfied with that amount? What do you think?
Well, I want to change your question just a little bit. It's not as much about what the courts satisfy is whether we're meeting the needs of our kids to be competitive in the global economy.
Will $500 million over 5 years do it, Jim?
Well, if you look at it, $500 million is a lot of money, and I respect the effort. But you got to also look at the fact that there's been a $5.6 billion cut over the last 10 years. So we just reinvested 10% of that cut. And yes, it's a lot of money, but there's a lot of students and families. There's 490,000 school children across the state that depend on that money. And you multiply by their families, parents, and grandparents. There's over 1,500 buildings. We have about 50,000 employees. It's a big, important system that educates our children.
It sounds like you're saying that's not enough money then, or
I don't think it is. I think we could have, especially with the revenues that we had, we could have made a much better investment in our future.
So do you expect the Kansas Supreme Court then to say no to this plan and to order lawmakers back to spend more on schools?
I hate to do the crystal ball, but yeah, my instincts tell me that they're not going to accept that over the next 5 years.
And Steve, I just want to jump in, and I just want to say how off base I think this whole debate has become when we're talking about focusing like a laser on adequacy and equity. there's no parent that I've ever spoken to who says, my goal for my child is that I hope Kansas can provide my child with an adequate public education. I mean, we should be talking in terms of world-class public education in Kansas, and that's what I hear whenever I talk to people.
So given that, Ethan, are you willing to raise taxes right now to further fund Kansas schools?
Oh, I think that we need to see what the revenues look like. Revenue numbers have gotten a little bit better, and there looks like there's some stability in the numbers. So I think at this point, no.
But you still want world-class Kansas schools.
I think that's got to be the objective. I think our kids deserve nothing less.
Jim Ward, how much money should have been spent by lawmakers this session?
You know, I think
what was the Jim Ward plan?
I think we could have met the needs of our school children across the state and passed the legal test with about $100 million more a year. Instead of $100 million a year over five, maybe $150 to $175 million, we offered a plan that put $75 million more dollars a year into the plan for about $850 million. And oh, by the way, it was funded through the first 3 years. It didn't need any revenue enhancements. It didn't require any cuts. We have been incredibly pleased with the results of the tax reform we did last year, and there are revenues there to do it. It was just a question of where we spent it.
But skeptics were saying that in the out years, in year two and year three and four, you would have required and you would have needed tax increases to do it.
It was in year four and five primarily. Three was questionable. Four and five were problems. The first 2 years were solid. And those skeptics tend to be anti-public school folks. They tend to never vote with their – they tend to talk good game, but they never put their money where their mouth is.
Jim Ward, you've been in the legislature for a number of years. How do you expect the Republicans who hold the majority in the House and the Senate to react to a potential ruling from the state Supreme Court that says $500 million wasn't enough, you got to come back and spend more?
Well, not all Republicans are the same. I think a strong core group of Republicans, the same ones that put together a coalition that was able to reform the tax experiment and was able to do some other things throughout the last 2 years, will come together and meet our obligation. Will there be some of the outliers who scream like their hair's on fire? Absolutely. But they scream like their hair on fire every time they have to step up and spend money on the future of Kansas.
You know, Jim, some other issues that you guys dealt with this session. From a Democratic perspective, you succeeded in holding off a push for a tax cut. How significant a step was that for the state? Because there was a serious effort to try to cut taxes one more time.
Yeah, it was a very irresponsible tax plan presented at the very last minute with very little or no back information or data. And it was the one we were talking about earlier where multinationals could bring back money they'd parked overseas to avoid tax consequences. So I thought it was very good to stop that so we could get real data. And like I said, I know the Democrats have an idea to reinvest that windfall in the middle class and the working class in their tax cuts, like cutting the food sales tax, like increasing the child care credit or the earned income tax, or to expand some deductions that hit middle class families, working class families, and poor families who carry the burden of the tax experiment.
Representative Jim Ward, the minority leader of the Kansas House, is my guest. With him, joining him in Lawrence, is Ethan Corson. He's executive director of the Kansas Democratic Party. We'll have Republicans on soon to talk about some of these same issues. Jim, you also dealt with gun legislation, maybe with some surprising results. Lawmakers passed a bill to prohibit gun ownership by anybody recently convicted of domestic violence. Even more surprising, lawmakers took no action on a bill that would have lowered the age for obtaining a concealed carry permit to 18. Should I be surprised?
Yes. The gun debate in Kansas and across America has changed in the last 6 months. Those kids have really stepped up and asked the right questions and changed the way people look at gun safety laws. And those were two very important steps to increasing safety and gun safety in Kansas. It was amazing,
Ethan Corson,
to watch that.
Ethan Corson, I'm wondering about the level of interest in young people as you get across the state to Kansas government, Kansas politics this year. What are you sensing?
I'm sensing vibrant chapters everywhere. I'm meeting tomorrow with the new executive director for the KU Young Democrats. We've been going all across the state. We've got a vibrant new chapter of Wyandotte County Young Democrats, Johnson County Young Democrats, and they've just grown everywhere. I was in Garden City, Kansas, and there were a bunch of students there who were very motivated. Dodge City High School actually just started a Young Democrats group. So I think whether you're talking Northeast Kansas or Southwest Kansas, you're seeing young people pay attention to these issues like never before. And my message to them has been that, you know, you have the most to gain and the most to lose in any of these debates, that this is going to be the Kansas that you inherit based off the decisions that are being made in the legislature right now. And it seems like without me telling them, they already knew that. I mean, they've taken it to heart.
Representative Jim Ward, what do you make of the state's new Republican governor, Jeff Collier? I think at a minimum, we could agree there's a new tone. There's a new outlook here. What do you make of his performance through the first 100 days of his administration here?
That's the old saying, new boss, same as the old boss. I haven't really seen in substance much difference. He's a much nicer person. He's much more engaging. He invites me and other Democrats to give him ideas. But the outcomes, you just have to look at what happened this weekend where they had a 10-year, $50 million contract, which was no bid, done in secret, firing 60 state employees. That's right out of the Sam Brownback playbook. You don't see much substantive difference between Jeff Collier and the governor who just left.
Twice now you've made that quip, Jim. I'm keeping track here.
Well, it's a quip, but it really says 8 years is enough. And Jeff Collier has not changed his stripes from the 10, 12-year public career he's had.
Jim, who's going to win the Republican nomination as someone who's been out around the state as much as you have been lately? What do you see happening there?
You know, it's a close race. I really don't know that there's a prohibitive favorite. My sense that there's more energy behind Kobach. I don't agree with what he says, but he says it strong, conviction, articulate. And I just get the sense that he probably comes through that primary. But either one could win it. And for the people of Kansas, it's, you know, are you conservative to level 10 or 12? They're both very similar in their extreme conservative politics.
Ethan Corson, who do you want to be the GOP nominee? Who's the easiest guy for you guys to beat?
Hey, look, I retired from the prediction business after November 2016, so I'm just going to put my shoulder to the wheel
wrong
and keep
on
working.
Yeah.
I was wrong on that one, and so I retired from the prediction business, and I'm just putting my shoulder to the wheel here and trying to help build the party to put us in a position for success no matter who we're running against.
Okay, that's a Democratic perspective in Kansas from Representative Jim Ward and Ethan Corson, Executive Director of the Kansas Democratic Party. Gentlemen, thank you very much for taking some time. I sure appreciate it.
Thanks, Steve. Had a great time.
Thanks, Steve.
Coming up, time for a break and then a conversation about seniors and retirement. I'm Steve Kraske, and you're listening to Up to Date on 89.3 KCUR. And welcome back. I'm Steve Kraske. Tomorrow on the show, we'll learn more about work requirements for people getting food assistance, the China tariffs, and drought with KCUR's Harvest Public Media team, which will be on the show tomorrow. That's on KCUR's Up to Date. Well, more baby boomers, my generation, are retiring every year, some by choice, others by circumstance. There are adjustments when transitioning away from a lifetime of work. Not everybody deals with those changes well. In a country where we so strongly define ourselves by what we do, there can be issues around usefulness, identity, and value when we step away from the daily routine of employment. So for those facing or newly entered into retirement, are feelings of anxiety, depression, and even resentment and anger normal? Should you consider counseling? Can you even find a therapist who understands the specific concerns and viewpoints of older adults? Yes, yes, and yes, says our next guest. Dr. Cher Bain is an adjunct professor at the UMKC School of Social Work, whose area is gerontological counseling. Professor, nice to have you. Welcome here.
Thank you.
Before we get into the issues surrounding retirement, let's talk about the shortage of specialists for the aging population. There's a definite lack of geriatric. Okay, in this country to care for the physical issues seniors have to deal with. Is there a similar shortage when it comes to mental health professionals for the oldest among us?
Yes, there's a, I think, generally not been that many people that are trained specifically in that area.
And that's a problem, isn't it?
It is.
Yeah. What are psychologists and therapists and counselors missing out on by not working with the elder population? I mean, are there things they can learn from, that we can learn from having them as patients and they can learn as well?
Well, definitely. They can learn a lot in terms of the wisdom, the ability to cope. In myself, it certainly gave me a much more positive perception for myself in terms of going into as I was aging.
Yeah. Well, okay, let's turn to retirement here. A lot of emotions are tied up there. As I said, we identify ourselves so much by what we do for a living. So how do we get mentally ready to answer the question, what do you do after we've left a job?
Well, I think the first thing is to look at that time of retirement as a transition. And ideally, you have some time to plan or work up to it and maybe ease into retirement. But some people, obviously, it's something happens and they are forced to. So that's not a pleasant experience at all.
How often do you find people who just simply go cold turkey? They're working one day, they leave on a Friday, and Monday morning they're at home, and suddenly they're wondering, what on God's green earth am I going to do here?
I think, in fact, even though many people know that they are going to be retiring at a certain point, they still, the majority of people do go cold turkey. They have thought about it maybe, but not actually really faced all the changes that would occur.
So the majority of people go cold turkey? That amazes me, given what a huge transition this is for so many people.
Right.
I wish you could. You probably want to get out there and say, hey, folks, you got to think about this a little bit, right?
Well, most of the pre-retirement programs that sort of really focus on finances, and then now they do give some about health and taking care of yourself and exercising, but maybe just maybe an hour presentation on and find out what you'd be happy doing with your time.
And what would you recommend, though?
Well, I think that more needs to be looked at as just not looking at retirement. It's really kind of a new concept. I mean, people, you know, a long time ago did not retire. They phased into changes in their work situation. So I think really looking at that is I took some time planning or getting into what I was spending time working. When I was in maybe high school, I began thinking about what I would like to do, and I maybe had four or five different jobs in my lifetime at least. And so retirement's going to take some time to transition to also. So giving yourself the first couple of years to learn to what to do, what do I find meaning in, what do I enjoy,
yeah.
How do I manage my time.
We're talking about the challenges of facing retirement and entering retirement here with Dr. Cher Bain. If our listeners want to chime in with their recommendations, maybe they've recently retired or retired a few years ago, and how difficult was that transition? How did you manage it? 816-235-2888 is our phone number here, or you can tweet us at KCUR up to date. So we're talking about the sort of the psychological challenge of confronting retirement. You've mentioned the financial challenge. Everything I read is that hardly anybody's prepared financially these days for all these years ahead of not working for pay a whole lot.
That's absolutely true. Unfortunately, the baby boomers are probably some of the worst in the sense of preparing psychologically. It just didn't fit their mode.
Why is that?
I'm not really, that's not my area of expertise in particular, but mm-hmm. I think that in generally, it's hard to plan. You don't know how long you're going to live, how expenses are going to keep changing and inflation, mm-hmm. et cetera. So it's an unknown.
So still people are walking into this vast new kingdom of retirement, not being financially prepared, not being mentally prepared. And for how many people does this turn out to be a train wreck of one type or another?
Well, I think for most people, it's the most important thing is health, because if you have good health, you can still perhaps work part time. and supplement in that way, or you can make adjustments if you have your physical health, and it's not as expensive to live if you can take care of yourself physically. So I think the most important factor is health.
Lots of folks want to talk about the challenges of facing retirement, something I've become thinking about myself the last couple of years. 816-235-2888 is the phone number here. Let's go to Bruce from Lee's Summit. Bruce, you're on the air. Good morning.
Hi, Steve. I retired in April of 2017.
Oh, good for you.
And I was pretty reticent about doing it because I'd worked all my life, but I can tell you I love it. It's fantastic.
Why?
I'm doing things that I've always wanted to do, and there are so many opportunities to volunteer and give back. I bought a bicycle. I bought a rack for my truck. I bicycled the Rock Island Trail, put down in Pleasant Hill. I volunteer at the Kansas City Rescue Mission. I play pickleball. I exercise. I do a lot of things that when you're working lots of hours, you don't have time to do. So my wife and I have found retirement to be fantastic.
How prepared were you for it when you went from, you know, working full-time, Bruce, to stepping into retirement that first day?
Well, my wife had been a school teacher, and she retired at 62. So we had a couple years of her being at home, and I continued to work. And truthfully, I've always enjoyed things, but I wouldn't say I was prepared. But I was prepared to seek things out. I live in Lee's Summit. We have a wonderful community center where you can go exercise. And all of that stuff's available to all the members of all the people that live in Lee's Summit. But as a over 65, you can participate at a very reasonable amount of money.
Hey, Bruce, hang on a second. I think Sherry, he just said something very interesting a minute ago. He was prepared to seek things out. And that sort of that curiosity, I think, would mm-hmm. propel someone forward for quite a ways.
And this is a good example of a person who has that mental approach of looking and seeking things and investigating things that they want to enjoy. And I think that's a key factor for anybody, to give themselves permission to try things. They might volunteer at something that they don't particularly like and give themselves permission to change and mm-hmm. do something and explore.
How did you figure out where you wanted to connect with your volunteer time and energy, Bruce?
Well, there's all kinds of the Kansas City Star has got stuff in it all the time that they're looking for volunteers. And I belong to a large church that has opportunities. And you don't have to, I mean, you can start meeting some people that are retired, and before long, you got more to do than you really have time to do. So I have found it to be fantastic. And I'm kind of an outgoing personality, so I don't have trouble asking people or going to things by myself. My wife and I do a lot of things separate, not as a couple, because she doesn't like to be as busy as I am. So there, like I said, I've found it to be very satisfying. And we've been able to do, we have four children, and one in Chicago, one in St. Louis, one in Boulder, and one in Kansas City. So also been able to spend more time with our family.
Oh, that's great. Bruce, I'm glad you called. I'm glad you're having so much success in retirement. Thanks very much.
Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
You know, Sherry, you do hear this from some retirees, that they're busier being retired than they ever were during their work careers. And that's interesting, too. Some people sort of go to the other extreme, don't they?
Exactly, yeah. And that's exciting, because now they're free, the floodgates are off, they can do what they enjoy doing. And they're not the people that you can find easily at home or just do things at the last minute. Unfortunately, not everybody is like that. And that's a smaller percentage. I think most people have a little time adjusting to retirement, but they do. So it's really just a minor portion of people, but they still, you know, that can lead to much more serious problems if they are not able to get that. In the sense of, if the person is alone and their primary sense of relationships were at work and they're cut off from that, then they get isolated and feeling bad. If their primary sense of value of being a person, you know, say if they, when they meet people, oh, I'm just retired now, then that's a negative and they're not seeing the value in themselves.
What's the most, the standard age for retirement? Do we know when most Americans call it quits from working full time?
Well, there still is a large number of people right around 65. There are obviously some that do it earlier and later. It's beginning to move up, and you're finding more people that are retiring between 68 and 70 at this point.
That's interesting. 816-235-2888 is our phone number here. What are the challenges that you found when you entered retirement land from a lifetime of working? I'm curious how you made that adjustment. 816-235-2888 or tweet us at KCUR up to date. Dave from Kansas City, Missouri, good morning.
Yes, sir. Well, it's been important for me for at least a couple of years. I've been thinking about retirement, actually even a little longer than that, but not too vigorously back then. But it's been important that when I retire from something, I've got to retire to something. So I don't just sit around and let my whole life unwind. And as it happens, I do have several interests. I'm an amateur radio operator with full privileges. I'm a musician and love multi-track recording and a little home recording studio that I have. Have other things, reading and a hobby of just electronic tinkering. So what I have to do, though, is to keep myself from just sitting around, letting time go by. I think motivation, making sure that I perhaps even think at the end of a day, what am I going to do next day, and at least set out a goal of maybe a couple things to accomplish that I can put my name on and say, I got this done.
Yeah, that sounds great. That sounds great. Dave, thanks very much. I appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Yeah, I'm wondering about how prepared society is, Cher, as you look at the broad landscape here of sort of getting ready to adopt all these people who are going to be retiring in the next few years as this baby boomer wave washes over the country. Are there enough programs to help people navigate and help them find places where they can connect and volunteer and help out?
Well, there are a lot of places, particularly in urban environments, that where people can volunteer. There are a growing number of programs that are preparing people a little bit more in terms of managing their time, finding places. I know the Shepherd Center here has had programs. Even the Communiversity occasionally offers some things like that. So there are a lot of free, readily available programs. But again, it's the getting people to know about them.
Yeah, getting the word out. And can people, is there any standard place where people can go to find this information out? Or do you have to just hunt around until you figure it out?
Unfortunately, this time you have to kind of hunt around.
Yeah, and figure it out. Okay, back to some calls here. Let's go to Dale from Prairie Village. Dale, you're on Up to Date. We're talking about the challenges of entering retirement, which I'm look forward to more and more some days than others. Dale, good morning.
Good morning to you.
Go ahead, Dale. What did you find?
Well, there's a fella running a weed eater outside of my car, so this may be hard to come through to. Anyway, I don't think that – I think it's important, but I don't think it's as important to counsel old folks. The counseling needs to start when you're young, and I was fortunate enough to join a group where we had that, and we've managed to save 25% of our pre-tax gross income every year for 35 years.
Wow.
And that has put me in a financial position where I don't have to worry about anything.
Oh, that's nice.
If that same type of self-discipline was instituted at an early age, I think a lot of this these retirement difficulties would go away. I know there's some withdrawal when you quit working. I just quit overnight after an unanticipated medical problem. But you need to plan, and when you're 65, it's too late.
Yeah. How many of your peers are struggling financially as they think about retirement, Dale? They have unexpected financial problems there.
I can't really answer that, but my close associates are pretty much the same situation I'm in. They worked hard, they saved their money, and now they're having a great time.
Oh, that's great. Dale, thanks a lot. I appreciate it.
Okay, thank you. Goodbye.
Bye-bye. Let's go to Michael from Overland Park. Michael, you're on Up to Date.
Hey, hi. How you doing, Steve?
Well, thanks.
I retired 21 years ago when I was 53.
Wow.
And
wow.
And I didn't do anything at first. Then my wife retired and taught me how to retire.
So it was hard for you at first.
No, I would sleep till 11 o'clock in the morning. I loved it, take my dogs for a walk. And then I started a business, and then I had grandkids and started doing daycare while I operated a business online. And that was great. I mean, I was full-time daycare for 2 years. Now I volunteer.
Well, was 53 too young for you to retire, Michael?
No, no. I didn't like what my organization was doing. I worked for the government, and it just got kind of boring.
Yeah. Financially, were you ready for it?
Oh, yeah. I had a good retirement. It was an early retirement, and they paid me. You know, I just didn't get as much of my pension as I would have gotten.
Yeah, right. Hey, thanks for the call. I appreciate it, Michael.
Sure, Steve. Thank you.
You know, Cher, I'm guessing that some retirees are sort of left wondering what value they have once they stop working, given how much emphasis we place on working in our society.
Yeah, I think that's very important. I had an acquaintance that was, I guess, maybe 15 years older than me, a very accomplished person, an artist that actually had all the means to do his work in his home, even though he had been a college professor and teaching art. And after he retired, when I would go and visit him, I was shocked by the fact that he would say, well, nobody really wants to listen to me anymore. They don't think I have anything to say. I still have things to say.
What did you say to him?
It really hit me hard. I was shocked because this is a man that I greatly admired. But I did say, well, I think you have to, you know, you have to keep trying. You have to realize that you have things to say and just keep searching for the people who want to listen to you. I want to listen to you, and I'm happy to talk to you anytime. And I did. I visited him more and tried to, you know, try to help him find his way. Within about 2 years, he was off and running and, you know, very happy and adjusted. But that was that transition time of just feeling awkward with people because it was no longer the, quote, college professor. So I think, again, it was more identifying with the role and thinking that people were interacting with me because of my role, not because of who I am.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a friend of mine here, I know through the station, John, who used to be a very successful medical professional. And he told me, you know, very, very busy while he was working. Took him, if I recall correctly, roughly a year to sort of, you know, ratchet down and then re-engage in a way that he found satisfying. And my last sense was that he was very happy being retired. But my point is, it took him a year to sort of, you know, gear down, if you will, and then figure out next steps forward. And that's a long time and a challenging amount of time.
It is. But I think, you know, for me, if I look back, it took me quite a few years to figure out what I wanted to do and how I wanted to work and find meaning. It took me quite a few years to find work that I found meaningful. And so if it only takes me a year or two for this next, because for many of us, hopefully we're talking about quite a few years to, you know, to enjoy at things that we have more choice with.
Let's go back to some phone calls. Let's go to Dennis from Lee Summit. Dennis, we're talking about the challenges of retirement. Good morning.
Good morning, and thank you for taking my call. I love your show.
Thanks.
I just want to say that I had a government job, and they made me retire, and I was really devastated. I thought, oh, this is terrible. But once I got my medical problem under control, it's been great. It's like they pay me to stay home. I love photography, which I started through my job with the government. You know, they made me a detective, and they said, here, take this camera and learn how to use it because you're going to need it. And so, you know, I've had a lifelong love of photography. I started studying languages when I was in Iraq and other places in the world. They're like, you know, you need to be able to talk to the people, and so I study languages. Mandarin's kind of kicking my rear end a little bit right now, but I'm still studying. You know, and I study courses, you know, not necessarily going, not the college courses necessarily, although I've studied some of those, but there are like, there used to be a place called the Teaching Company, which was absorbed by another company. and I've done like 100 of their courses.
Wow.
It's just, you know, there's always something to do and learn. When I was younger, I had friends who would say, you know, I'm bored, I don't know what to do. I never felt that way.
Oh, that's great, Dennis.
I always felt like things to do.
I really appreciate the phone call, Dennis. Thanks very much. And you know, he mentioned that he retired unexpectedly. I think we see a lot of that as well. Folks not ready to go, cost-cutting at companies, early retirement options being offered. That's got to lead to some anger and resentment among those who aren't quite ready to retire. How do you work through that?
Well, I think the first thing is to realize that it's not retirement that is the bad thing. It's the fact that things have happened that are out of your control and you weren't prepared. You didn't have an opportunity for it. If we have a flood and something happens to your house, you don't blame yourself or feel. So it's kind of we have to have the right approach about it and the attitude. And it's going to take a year or two. But there are, you know, counseling situations that you can go to a counselor and have them help you work through that. And I'm not talking.
Are there counselors geared specifically towards senior citizens?
There are, you know, there's not a lot of them, but there are some. And there are a lot of people. Part of what I do at the School of Social Work is I train students to be sensitive to those problems specifically of seniors. So there, it's a growing number of people that have that sensitivity and a small number that have that specialization.
Can a young person who's still actively employed, you know, be sensitive and in the moment for someone who's in a completely different space in their lives?
Definitely. They can learn to you don't have to have had that experience. You have to understand the experience and what it means to that person. Again, it's not necessarily a long-time therapeutic approach. It might be one session or two to help them realize what's going on and have somebody understand them.
Okay, we'll have to leave our conversation there. That's Dr. Cher Bain. She's an adjunct professor at the UMKC School of Social Work. And Cher, thanks so much. We sure appreciate it.
Thank you.
All right. Last week on the show, we learned about sick prison inmates in Missouri and across the country who aren't getting the health care they need. You can hear that conversation and other episodes from last week. Just go to kcur.org/uptodate. Tomorrow, we'll go on a journey to the end of classic rock and visit the places where geriatric rockers are still making music. Our show is produced by Danny Alexander, Luke Martin, Kathleen Pointer, and Claire Verbeck. I'm Steve Kraske, and you are up to date.